The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following program is sponsored by Cleveland Right to Life and is responsible for its content.
Healthcare that works better and costs less. Seems like an oxymoron, right? Take a minute and check out our sponsor, Solidarity Healthshare. Members say that faith-based health sharing is a much better fit than insurance, all while costing less. Prices start at $384 a month for families. Call now to see how much you can save. 844-417-0636. That's 844-417-0636. Paying too much for healthcare and supporting services you don't believe in? Our sponsor, Solidarity Healthshare, has prices that are 60% less than the nation's average cost of healthcare. Join the nation's leading healthcare sharing ministry, built by people of faith for people of faith, saving money through ethical and affordable healthcare. Call now to see how much you can save. 866-977-5821. That's 866-977-5821.
Welcome to From the Median, a daily report from the front line of the pro-life movement, discussing two worldviews that are driving our culture in opposite directions. From the Median asks, which side of the road are you on? What direction do you want our culture to go? Tune in as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life. And now your host, Molly Smith.
Good evening and welcome to From the Median, where we are concerned with the middle ground, not just to understand both sides of an argument, but also to awaken the consciences of those who are neutral or indifferent to this, the greatest civil rights movement of all times, the pro-life movement. Listeners, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Hope that you will download this interview on your podcast app, as well as pass it on to anybody and everybody that you know. We are thrilled with the success of our podcasting. But right now, we're going to get right down to nitty gritty, and we're going to introduce you to a brand new guest, Susan Ciancio. She's written a wonderful article. It's actually quite sad, but by the same token, it's very, very well sourced and just an amazing. Susan is a freelance editor and writer who currently serves as the executive editor for the Culture of Life Studies program and American Life League's Celebrate Life magazine. In addition to editing fiction books, she also writes for Human Life International and Secular Outfits. So it's great to have you with me, Susan. Thank you so much for joining us. It's great to talk with you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Susan, we are seeing all kinds of when I started back in the pro-life movement in America, I was very involved in Canada before I came here. But when I started in America, we were dealing with one aspect pretty well. And I guess it was the foundational brick upon which all these other things have built itself. But we were dealing with abortion, with the rights to abortion for all women had the right to abortion. We are now dealing with a multitude of things that have occurred as a result of, I think, the breakdown of the family, the devaluing of life. The search for constant happiness, as far as this is the way I look at it. I mean, abortion is sort of a search for happiness type of thing. If you're going to have I'm not going to be happy if I have this child. So you've got all of that stuff that's sort of out there swirling around. And now you've just written an article that says what percentage of transgenders regret surgery. Now we are dealing with the transgender issue. Who would have thought it? Oh my goodness.
I know. It's very sad. And with organizations and even, state governments that are targeting children and telling them that they can switch their gender back and forth or, at whim, it's very scary to think that young children are hearing this message. And you're right, it comes down to happiness because, they're telling little kids that if they feel that they might be a girl, or if they feel that they might be a boy, then they can go ahead and do these puberty blockers or have these terrible surgeries that will maim their bodies. And we're getting a lot of people who are coming back and saying, no, this isn't right. But it's because they were told to follow their feelings rather than to love themselves for who they are and to see their inherent dignity as a human being.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I can remember I grew up in a farm in Africa, and my family consisted of three girls and a boy. Well, my brother got to do all kinds of things that we sisters were not allowed to do. And I can honestly remember thinking at times, oh, I just wished I was born like John. I wish I was a boy, you know, because then I could do the scissors.
Yeah. Well, and I was what people would call a tomboy.
Yeah.
You know, I loved sports. I still love sports. I had mostly boyfriends in the neighborhood. I mean, friends who were boys.
Yeah.
And we would go out and we'd play football and we'd play soccer and we'd ride bikes and we'd do all that kind of stuff. And, you know, nobody ever once said, well, gee, you like doing this stuff, so you must be a boy. So maybe you should be a boy. Of course not.
Yeah.
That was just the things that I liked. But today, you know, if you're a boy who happens to like dance or musicals or singing or something like that, or a girl who likes to be, you know, to do boy sports, maybe, mm-hmm. you know, or something along those lines, kids are, these likes and dislikes are twisted to make it seem like they should be the opposite sex.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting you would say that, because my very best friend growing up, she married, one of the top ballet dancers, in the city we lived in. You could not have found a more masculine person. But in today's world, I'm sure there would have been those questions constantly. Are you sure you're in the right place? Are you sure you don't want to be a girl? So you look at all of that kind of stuff and you see what's happened and the fat, you know, I also know that sort of back in 2013, our organization, Cleveland Right to Life, took on what had always been assumed it was an unspoken fact of the pro-life movement, was that we were first, and you know, the building block upon which you build is a family. But we'd sort of pushed it away and we were just talking about the pregnancies. So we went back and said, no, the family is the foundational building block and we do not accept homosexual marriage. Well, my goodness gracious me, just about the whole of the American pro-life movement came down like a ton of bricks on us. Because at that time, this was something that it was out there and people didn't want to talk about it. But I honestly feel that, you know, this is sort of where we've come from. We, you know, we said, well, just let's love be love type of thing. And we'll just accept that. And then we accepted that was just, you know, a social marriage that you had to, now you have to have marriage in the churches. Then you had to have, now you're into transgenderism, which brings me to the article that you wrote, Susan. And it's, you know, real life stories. So Susan, tell me a little bit about the real life stories that you have come across in which actually drove you to write this article.
Well, you know, there's a lot of stories about children who have gone through these gender transitioning surgeries, and the stories are just so tragic because not only have these children been, you know, I would say manipulated into believing that they could find happiness if they were to maim their bodies. But, you know, the adults around them have allowed this to happen. And, you know, gender dysphoria is a real thing. And it's tragic when a child feels that way, but they should be taught to love their bodies for who they are, not taught to change those bodies. And there is an incredibly high percentage of kids who have a dislike for their body, let's say adolescents, who grow out of it naturally if nothing is done to, you know, give them puberty blockers or hormones or any of those kinds of things. But, you know, as I said in the article, you know, there's a young girl named Chloe who, when she was 12 years old, she believed she was transgender. At 13, she told her parents, So that same year, she was put on puberty blockers and prescribed testosterone. At 15, she had a double mastectomy.
Oh, my goodness.
And then less than a year later, she realized she'd made a mistake. I mean, she's just 16 years old. She can't even drive, but she's having this life-altering surgery. It's just truly tragic.
You know, and you have to say, who are the medical people, the medical so-called professionals who are doing this to our young people? Who are they?
Exactly. You know, I listened to a podcast by Jason Evert, I believe, and he was talking about this topic specifically, mm-hmm. and was saying that he knew a anesthesiologist who said to every doctor he knew, don't ever ask me to do one of these surgeries because I just won't do it.
Yeah.
So we know that there are some strong, faithful doctors
professionals.
Out there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Gosh, you know, and
unbelievable, just unbelievable.
Yeah. Apparently there's even a Reddit subreddit where they have people who have detransitioned and they talk about their stories, and it's growing in numbers. And if you read through this page, and I did a little bit, the stories were just horrific. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of young people, you know, in their teens who had had this surgery and who regretted it.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny, I and I'm trying to think of his name. He's so very, very well known. He's been a speaker at our convention, Bringing America Back to Life convention. And he's out from California. He went through the whole thing, you know, thought he was a woman and, you know, went through some of the transitioning thing, not quite as, I think, as serious as it is now. This was many years back. He's well into his 70s now. And you're going to know the name as soon as I say it, but I can't think of it right now. But
yeah. Think of it either.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, this is one of the things that he talks about. It's instead of dealing with the mental problem that you're having or the whatever it may be, maybe there is a hormone imbalance or something, but instead of dealing with it at the fundamental level, they're getting pushed into this and they're getting pushed into having these transitions. It is so devastating for the person involved who's been going through this. As I said, the medical staff, the medical professionals that are doing this, there is, you know, obviously they're hooked on all kinds of drugs for the rest of their lives. That's must cost every time that one of these surgeries is done has to be a fortune from the perspective of the medical profession. Goodness gracious me. They've got to take deep, you know, hormone problems. And then there's all the side surgeries that have to happen and all of this. Oh my goodness. You also talk about a woman about Eva. Tell us about her, who is I guess she's a male.
Eva, let's see. Yeah, she was a woman who lived as a transgender male as a teenager. She did not medically transition, though. She just lived, so she didn't have the surgeries. But she was one of the people who states that she felt misled by family members, by doctors. And she has decided to go back and live as the woman she was born as. But, you know, there's another example of someone whose maybe parents, you know, you can't say what parents are thinking, of course, but they didn't get her the proper help.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I know that when I mentioned to you before we came on the air that we had Chloe Cole here in Ohio very recently talking about her experience, and she's suing the medical profession. She's doing, you know, she's really trying to stop this by using mm-hmm. the system available to her. But her story is that her parents were told, if you don't do this to Chloe, you know, she's going to commit suicide. The parents were terrified. So a lot of this is fear.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I hope that the majority of parents want to do what's best for their children. But, you know, then you have all of these organizations screaming that you have to do what your children want or else we'll take them away or else your child will commit suicide and then you will be at fault. Mm-hmm. So parents feel trapped. What do I do? They need to have the right resources so they can help those children so that they don't have these awful surgeries or be on these puberty blockers and hormones for the rest of their lives and regret it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I guess this Eva, this who I'm trying to think of who she is. Yeah, Eva. It is Eva because she was a transitional male. But she started an organization called D-Trans Canada. There seems to be more and more of these organizations popping up. Am I correct?
Yes, there are. And this site, yes, D-Trans Canada, it says its objectives are to help people with their social support needs and to, you know, get through the detransition process and to not make them feel bad, because there are then groups that make them feel like they've done something wrong to go back.
Mm-hmm. I was recently talking to somebody, an author too, of a book that has just been written about this, and we got talking about, you know, how all of this stuff happens, and she brought up the fact that, you know, this is like saying to someone who's got anorexia, you know, let me help you be an even better anorexic. You know, we would never do that. But what they're discovering too, was that a lot of the anorexias, people with anorexia are sort of morphing into using some of this transgender stuff to try and help them cope with what they're dealing with. So this is not fixing anything. It is a devastation. And to think that so many of our schools are actually pushing this stuff. I was just reading this morning about a school system that is quietly and silently, going into, you know, doing, you know, when the students go to the social worker or to the nurse or something, and they get asked questions and how you're doing, and they do these assessments at the school. They're actually asking them, not in writing, but they're asking them in person. So are you okay with being a boy? Would you think that you should be a girl? So they're asking these questions and popping this into these people. This is criminal. Absolutely criminal.
Yeah. And they're giving young children, you know, they're planting these ideas that young children shouldn't be okay with their bodies. And
yes.
The question that they have, and we all know that young children and adolescents, you know, young children like to pretend they're somebody they're not. You know, one day they're a dinosaur, the next day they're, you know, a superhero. And for children who might be slightly confused, when you start planting these seeds, they're going to grow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to honor that with truth, with reality, with messages that they need to love their bodies, that they have dignity as the person they were born with, and that if they have concerns about who they are, they need to address those concerns rather than changing their outward appearance. Because we know that you can't totally change your sex. Your DNA is in every part of you. So if you change, you know, your outward genitalia or have a mastectomy, you know, you're still going to be a girl. You're
exactly.
still going to be a female. You're just going to look like a boy, and you could live like a boy and, you know, dress like one. And for all appearances outwardly, people could see that. But that doesn't really change who you are.
Exactly. Exactly. It's just, I am flabbergasted. The more I read, you know, the more we watch around us and see what's happening, it's devastating to humanity to see this going on. But I do think that there is some little bit of hope, and maybe there is, maybe there isn't. But from all accounts, a lot of the detransitioners are beginning to speak up. And according to your article that you wrote, and again, folks, it's What Percentage of Transgenders Regret Surgery, and it's a Human Life International article that was written very recently in July. You go there and read it if you need. We all need to be involved and involved in this discussion, as well as informed about what's going on, because it's only going to be through that we will actually be able to intelligently push back and fight back against this agenda. It is totally an agenda that's going on out there. But you did talk about the fact that many of the transitioners that are actually detransitioning are beginning to speak out, you know, about this, Susan, and saying that they are They are coming across a lot of people that are transitioners who are detransitioning, who are getting off the hormone treatments, but nobody seems to be, following up on that. So there's a whole bunch of, we need to find out exactly what's going on with this, because I think we will be surprised when we see the statistics of how many of these transitioners are actually detransitioning. And from your article that says that there has been a transgender survey, back in 2022. What's the status with that?
Well, the results of that one have not been published yet. So there was one. So the one in 2015 I pulled some statistics from. That one claimed that about 11% of female respondents reverted back to their original sex. Transgender at 4%. That doesn't maybe seem like a lot, but you know, when you think about the amount of people who have transitioned, and maybe the time hadn't come yet where they transitioned back. I don't remember the exact longevity dates of that survey.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it would be really interesting to find out, you know, when they publish the results of the 2022 survey.
You know, you have to wonder there, because I've seen so many of these, and we've just gone through the whole COVID situation with so many of the data that came out, the data that was discovered, was just buried if it didn't fit the narrative. So we have to watch for that, folks, and we need to be ready for that. And I'm hoping, Susan, that you'll be following that, because when we do get that information out, we do need to go there and you know, we need to be able to make it public to everybody as much as we can, go through the alternate medias and the alternate ways of getting the word out there. Because, you know, I think, you know, you mentioned a couple of times parents' involvement in all of this. You know, you have to wonder if you're not following this, and if you're busy with, you know, mom and dad both working more than, you know, a couple of kids at home, everything's going crazy. You're trying to do all of this and then, you know, not realizing exactly what's going on in the classroom, or in the school environment, somebody, your child coming to you, it can be overwhelming, and maybe they think they are doing the best thing, but we have to get the information to those parents to be able to say, put the brakes on, stop.
Exactly. And we have to help parents take that power back, because parents are the first educators of their children. Children are ours. They are not the school system's. They don't belong to the school system. No. You know, when kids go to school, the parents should have every right to see everything on the curriculum that they're learning, on any syllabi that they have. You know, for instance, my kids were in public high school, and as part of their like health and wellness class, they did some sex ed, and we live in Tennessee, so it's more of a conservative state. But I went in, they had a night during open house where they said, you know, parents can come in and look at, you know, the table of contents, and you can look at some of the materials that we're going to be giving. And I went in because I thought I need to see, you know, what they're going to be teaching and, you know, what's going on in this class. And it was fine. I didn't have a problem with it because it didn't have this underlying agenda.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it is an agenda. It definitely is an agenda.
It is. It didn't talk about, you know, gender transition or anything like that. It was basically biology. Here's what happens. And then it kind of moved on to treating people well and you know, and that kind of thing. And it wasn't really, it didn't really have a lot to do with a typical sex ed is what you'd think about. Okay. So parents really need to be involved.
Absolutely.
Get involved in their school board, if they have concerns about what might be taught in the classroom. Talk to teachers. Take the time to talk to the kids, you know, get them off their phones for a little bit. Ask them what they're learning in school.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What the teachers are talking about, because even if it's not on a syllabus or not on, you know, a written agenda for a classroom, teachers can still talk about these kinds of things in the classroom and really mold our children to something that's distorted.
Exactly. Susan, you are also, and I'm going to get you back, I think, because I noticed as well that you are a fairly involved in the homeschooling curriculum, in the homeschooling world, the Catholic homeschooling. So I have my grandchildren, several of my grandchildren are in Catholic homeschooling. So I want to have you back and talk. Talk about those as well. So that would be absolutely wonderful. You know, honestly, thank you for your diligence and for your dedication to our families. And that's the only way I can say it. Thank you for your dedications to our families.
Yeah, I truly believe that, you know, families, like you said, are the foundation of society, and we have to protect them. We have to protect our children. Yeah. And my children are the most important things in the world to me. And, you know, I feel terrible for some of these parents going through these things, and for the children who are being misled and who, you know, just need to learn to love themselves and get through things and to have the support of parents.
That's exactly right. We need to empower our parents, and we have. I think COVID was a blessing in lots of ways, because it certainly opened the eyes of many, many, many parents. And I think parents are taking back their children, which is a wonderful thing. As I said, Susan, we're going to get you back, because I want to talk more with you about all of this. So thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, thank you so much.
God bless you lots. Bye-bye. Don't go anywhere. I will be back with you right after this very short break with another world-class, inspiring guest.
Paying too much for healthcare and supporting services you don't believe in? Our sponsor, Solidarity Healthshare, has prices that are 60% less than the nation's average cost of healthcare. Join the nation's leading healthcare sharing ministry, built by people of faith for people of faith, saving money through ethical and affordable healthcare. Call now to see how much you can save. 866-977-5821. That's 866-977-5821. Healthcare that works better and costs less. Seems like an oxymoron, right? Take a minute and check out our sponsor, Solidarity Healthshare. Members say that faith-based health sharing is a much better fit than insurance, all while costing less. Prices start at $384 a month for families. Call now to see how much you can save. 844-417-0636. That's 844-417-0636.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.